From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, May 26, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listener support and by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The number of cases of COVID-19 in Maine has risen by 35 for a total of 2,109 in the state. The Maine CDC is also reporting another death, bringing the total number of deaths associated with the disease to 79. Governor Janet Mills announced today that her administration is prepared to quadruple the number of people who identify and help isolate people who've been exposed to the coronavirus through contact tracing. Steve Missler has some details.
The Maine Center for Disease Control has been using contact tracing to follow outbreaks since the state confirmed its first case of COVID-19 in March. The agency was able to pinpoint the source of one early cluster of cases to a traveling salesperson. Contact tracing involves interviewing people infected with the virus about their travel history and interactions with other people, who are then notified and urged to self-isolate. State Health and Human Services Commissioner Gene Lambrew says the effort to bolster Maine's contact tracing team from 30 staffers to as much as 125 is designed to complement its newly expanded testing capacity.
We're going to see a climb in the number of tests in the state of Maine, tests per capita, which is why we're doing this now. We don't think we're too late. We have an ability, though, if things rise rapidly, to speed this up. Our systems are in place and we're ready to go.
Lambrew says the expansion of contact tracers will be guided by public health metrics, such as a sharp increase in case counts. Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah says more contact tracers might be needed to track an outbreak in a factory setting involving a lot of people, while fewer tracers might be needed for cases involving household transmission. Maine has also launched a new reporting tool called the SARA Alert System, which has been used by other states to communicate with people diagnosed with COVID-19 and monitor close contacts. Lambrew says the $7.5 million effort is funded by money made available through a coronavirus relief package that was passed by Congress in April. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And Maine's Secretary of State's office is encouraging people to vote via absentee ballot during the July primary election to limit the exposure that voters and polling workers have to the coronavirus. The state will still hold in-person balloting on July 14th with social distancing and safety protocols in place, but the office says it is easier and safer to vote via absentee ballot. In weather tonight, fog along the coast, otherwise mostly cloudy with some showers in the far north and lows in the mid-50s to the low 60s. Bare spots on store shelves serve as a reminder that this has not been an ordinary year. While there is plenty of meat being produced by farmers, they have had trouble getting their meat processed due to outbreaks of COVID-19 at processing plants. And in Maine, many processors have more work than they can handle. The situation might be breathing new life into a bill co-authored by Maine Democrat Shelley Pingree called the Prime Act. Critics say it could turn the clock back on consumer safety. But supporters say it would create a safer and more stable meat supply. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
I've got Scottish Highland cows, Coon Coon pigs, American Guinea hog pigs.
You've got some belted Galloways, too.
For small-scale farmers like Chris Peters, slaughtering time can be a long and expensive day between loading animals and driving to the state-inspected facility, which is more than an hour away over country roads.
It costs gas, time, which we have no time working and work at a farm. Instead of bringing it to some fellas that are right up in the next town up, or do it right here on the farm if we'd want to.
Under the provisions of the Processing Revival and Intrastate Meat Exemption Act, or PRIME Act, farmers like Peters would be allowed to use so-called custom processing facilities, a number of which already exist for processing moose, deer, and livestock intended for personal consumption. Those facilities are licensed by the state, but at the moment, any meat that goes through a custom processor must be labeled not for sale. Peters says if the PRIME Act were passed, he would better be able to meet a noticeable spike of demand from customers all clamoring to buy meat.
I mean, I'm getting a lot more people asking me about it. How many are you raising this year? Or do you have any piglets for sale? And I know other farmers that are sold out for the fall.
The rules associated with meat processing are fairly complex. A number of exemptions and programs already exist. There are rules governing intrastate versus interstate sales, wholesale versus retail, small scale and large scale. But the general rule at the moment is that if a farm wishes to sell the meat it produces in-state or out-of-state, it must go to a plant that's had a state or a federal inspector actually present on the grounds at the time of slaughter. Pingree, who raises cattle on North Haven Island, says these processors can be few and far between, even at the best of times. And during the pandemic, state-inspected processors like Barry Higgins at Maple Lane Farms in Charleston are already seeing about four times the business they normally do.
We are strained just as much as we can possibly do.
Higgins says he's having to stop taking orders periodically in order to just catch up. Meanwhile, stores need more meat. As for the Prime Act,
I do believe that there's some merit to it, but I just think that we don't want to go too fast and not make sure that we have the proper inspections processes in place.
But Chuck Lawrence, who operates the Tradewinds grocery store chain, one of which is just up the road from Peter's, says he's always interested in buying more local foods. They do tend to be more expensive. But he says customers have probably noticed some price increases in the stores already. Normally, Lawrence says the store buys 95% of its meat from Hannaford Brothers, but he hasn't been able to get it due to the supply chain problem. That means he's been buying from restaurant suppliers and other smaller processors who are working around the clock to send out local meat. Lawrence says a USDA stamp does provide quality guidelines, which he wants to see preserved for consumers.
They have select, choice, and prime. I think that there needs to be some way to communicate to the customer what they're getting for product.
Pingree has tried unsuccessfully to get the bill through before, but she says the problems highlighted by COVID-19 have earned the bill some new fans. One of them is Ohio Republican Warren Davidson, who says state governments already oversee a great many things and have also taken the lead in responding to the public health crisis of COVID-19. He says if the federal government doesn't really need to be involved, it shouldn't be.
States can make many of these decisions. A lot of times people look at any kind of change in regulation as, well, then you just don't want any regulation. It's like, no, I'm a Republican. I'm not an anarchist. You know, I'm for a limited government.
But among those adamantly opposed to the Prime Act are a number of national trade associations. Sarah Little from the Meat Institute, that's a D.C.-based trade group representing the red meat and turkey industries, told Maine Public in a statement that while Pingree's bill is being touted as a food and farm empowerment act, its real impact would be to, quote, create a dangerous fracture in the nation's food safety system, end quote. It goes on to say that the bill would set a dangerous precedent by authorizing the commercial sale of non-inspected meat products, and that it would create a serious loophole that would compromise the U.S. food safety system and consumers' confidence in it.
I mean, I'll just say, give me a break.
That's the bill's co-author, Democrat Shelley Pingree. She's not buying the health and safety argument from such organizations.
I've been on the Agriculture Committee for 10 years, on the Agriculture Appropriations Committee. I can't tell you how many committee hearings we've had where they come in and they want to deregulate the safety systems around meat. They've sped up the lines. They've been eking away at those safety regulations for a very long time.
And Pingree says consumers want to know who their farmer is and how their meat was raised. She says there's no reason to suppose that more local oversight would be less safe. There's no scheduled action for the Prime Act, but earlier this month, Pingree sent a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urging floor action on the bill. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a look at teenagers and the pandemic. I'm Nora Flaherty.